Committee will come to order.
I brought my wife.
Good morning, members. Bless you. Before we get started, there's a couple of things that we need to do. It was brought to my attention that in the February 8th minutes, we had inadvertently marked Representative Detmer as absent. And so we want to make sure we make that correction. So what I would like to do is to move that staff be directed to make the necessary correction for the minutes to February 8th to represent Representative Detmer's presence. So I'll move that. Is there any discussion on that? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative Swales.
In the spirit of just trying to celebrate good things about our committee, last night Bob Detmer was on Almanac, and it was just a wonderful interview on the rookie section, and I just want to congratulate him for making our freshman class look so good.
Representative Detmer, I think you made us all look good, not just the freshman class. I caught that piece, too, and you looked like a very formidable. There was a wonderful picture of Representative Detmer wrestling in, I think, was that picture from Bemidji State? Is that, yeah. And you looked pretty formidable. You had your game face on in that picture. And may I have a motion to approve the minutes of February 13th this week? Representative Wardlaw moves.
They're close enough for government work. I move them.
Representative Wardlaw moves approval of the February 13th minutes. Discussion. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Okay, let's see. Members, we've got some additional information submitted in writing in our packets from the North Minneapolis hearing that we had a few days ago, and so please refer to that as well. And I'm sorry? Oh, I see. If you were not in the K-12 Finance Division, you will find that testimony, because that was distributed in Finance Division earlier. All right. Members, we have scheduled three bills this morning. We were notified, I think late last night, that Representative Thiessen wanted to withdraw his bill. He felt that the language in his bill had substantial overlap with one of the bills that we would be hearing today, and so he has asked that bill be removed and not be heard from committee today. So we have two bills, Representative Bly's bill, House File 585, and Representative Peterson's bill, House File 302. Members, both of these bills have been requested, assuming that we think they're good enough to pass, have been requested to be heard in Representative Slawick's Early Childhood Committee. And so it's my hope that we'll do a thorough policy vetting of these bills and move those bills forward to her committee for their eventual deliberation. I think there are some overlaps between the two bills, and I think the intent here is to for that committee to have a number of options before it on these early childhood issues, so that as they move forward in putting together their omnibus bill, they would have those options before them to do that. Nonetheless, members, I would encourage your good and thorough vetting and tough policy questions for our testifiers today. Both bills do cover quite a bit of ground, and I want to ask our testifiers this morning be concise and to the point, because I think our good time will be spent with members really understanding what's in these bills and articulating either their support or concerns or possible suggestions for changes. And so I want to make sure we have a really good vetting of those bills. So with that, we'll start with House File 585. Representative Bly, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. I am Representative David Bly of House District 25B, and I'd like to invite up my testifiers, Lois Engstrom of the Minnesota Association for Family and Early Education, and Bruce Bjork, Director of Programs at the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches.
Great. While they come up, the chair is going to move your bill, Representative Bly. And our motion, let's make sure I get this right, is that House File 585 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Members, I know I said that the bills would be, the intent is to get them to the Early Childhood Finance Committee. As you all know, we have a new and interesting structure here in the House, and so our motions will be to refer them to sort of that hub committee of finance, which then would re-refer them to the committees that we want them to go to. So that's the motion on the table, Representative Bly.
I do have some amendments. Should I begin with
yes,
that?
Yes, you do. Let me pull that up quickly.
As you mentioned, Chairman Mariani, there was some duplication in some of the bills, and as we looked over them, we tried to see if we could make that a little bit easier for people. And also, I have some language changes.
Representative Bly, the chair will move House, or amendment rather, H.O. 585A1. And why don't you briefly explain what that amendment
okay.
does for us?
On page 3, section 5 in the bill that you were passed out initially, the language relating to the kindergarten assessment, I think it was better described or more completely described in the bill, the second bill that you'll hear today. So we decided to pull that out and let it be heard in the other bill. Then on page 4, line 1, after the word or, insert the word child care or the word child care. And then on page 4, line 3, delete the word end and insert a comma. And after the word relatives, insert or child care providers. And then on page 4, line 4, delete the word there, T-H-E-I-R. Page 4, line 5, after parents, delete the word and insert a comma, and after the word relatives, insert the words or child care providers. Then on page 4, delete lines 25 through 28. And on page 4, line 29, delete the number 3 and insert 2. And then renumber the sections and sequence and correct and internal references.
All right, so members, this will then put the bill in the shape that the author wishes to have the bill considered for us today. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is amended. Representative Bly, please.
Okay.
Continue.
The purpose of this bill is to give priority to ECFE to programs to serve at-risk parents and children, and especially because program funds are limited, we want to make sure that those programs, those ECFE programs, also are reaching out to the most needed children and families. Let's see here. Sorry. It also provides requires that the Education Commissioner develop and implement an accountability plan that focuses on rate, ethnicity, and income for the families served by ECFE. And there's language in here that references the increase of funding from 112 to 120. And raises the home visiting levy from 160 to 320. And creates parent education grants with the amount of the appropriations left blank. And again, the parent education grants is encouraging others aside from ECFE to apply to meet some of those needs that that children and families in need, in great need, have. With that, I'd like to ask my testifiers to speak to their portions of the bill.
Wonderful. Ms. Engstrom, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Mariani, members of the committee, my name is Lois Engstrom, and I'm representing the Minnesota Association for Family and Early Education. And until I retired from the department about 3 years ago, I spent close to 25 years working with all of these early childhood programs. And now that I'm retired, believe me, it takes something really important to get me up and out of my house on a cold morning before 7 o'clock. And I think this bill is very important.
Well, we appreciate your presence here. I had the privilege of working with you, Ms. Engstrom, several years ago when I served on the Early Childhood Committee at that time, and I think we did some pretty good work in those years. So, welcome.
Thank you. The various provisions that Representative Bly has gone over obviously are all important to us. The ones that I've been asked to talk to specifically have been to do with early childhood family education and that home visiting levy. One of the things I wanted to do, early childhood family education went statewide in 1984, and it's amazing, as you look over, families have changed a lot. Also, early childhood family education has changed a lot. And so I wanted to give you a picture of what it currently does, and then you can see how this bill that Representative Bly has put forth would enhance the kinds of things that we're trying to do more of, specifically some of the strategies needed for the highest at-risk populations to hire more resources and so on, and this bill would help us do that. Just to give you a brief picture, some of these things are what you might have in your mind, because if you visit programs, you see some of this. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that you don't see, and that's the part that I wanted to bring up. So currently, early childhood family education programs, there are a lot of them that do weekly classes for all parents and so on. Incidentally, 70% of the parents who participate in those classes are working parents. And so that pretty much reflects the demographics of Minnesota. Family literacy programs are programs that usually meet more like 3 to 15 hours per week with intensive services, with the parent education being a big piece, but also obviously learning new language, increasing the educational level of the parents as well as the children. There are teen parent classes going on in high schools as well as in alternative programs, weekly bilingual classes. This has become an increasing need. And here again, of course, there's some increased expenses with translators and always trying to find people who match the language and the culture of the families participating. Weekly classes specifically for fathers and for single parents. Classes designed specifically for families who have children with special needs. This is a request that has emerged more and more over the years from these families. They like to be included with all other families for part of it, but they want part of it to really talk about the challenges that they face as parents of special needs children. Weekly classes that involve mental health professionals and so on for families that have multiple stressors and some serious mental health needs. So they're working in conjunction with the specialist, but also to deal with the parenting needs that go with this. Weekly classes at low-income housing sites, trying to go out to where the people are rather than having them come in. Weekly classes for very diverse population. Here's another one that can take a whole lot of extra resources, but is very important. Transportation for a whole lot of these strategies I'm talking about has become a big issue, and as you know, transportation is very expensive. We get a lot of referrals from the court system. Parents are referred to the program. Weekly classes to homeless shelters, to the crisis nurseries, to traditional or transitional housing. I remember being invited a couple of times to the shelters for abused women who are there in places where they can't tell you exactly where they're located and swear you to secrecy to not reveal the address of where you're going. And those are, obviously some parents are very much in need, and the idea there is to give them support while they're in this really intense situation and connect them with resources wherever they may be moving so that they've got support after that. This has been going on for years. The outreach at WIC sites, that's a great place to reach a lot of parents, and sometimes some of the services are delivered right there. Collaboration with Head Start, with child care, and with preschools to provide the parent education that is needed in all of those settings and programs as well. For outreach, a lot of different going to resource fairs and so on, particularly a good way to go to all the different cultural festivals to reach families of some of the newer populations coming in. The outreach is an ongoing effort. And the problem in recent years is you're doing outreach and then you end up with these people that you can't begin to serve. And so that's been a bit of an ethical dilemma there. But I think we need to really focus on the families who can benefit the most. The expanded outreach always to specific populations, recruiting people who represent those populations to be a part of the efforts. And that's some of them. There are other things going on. Not every program offers all of these things. You'll see different things in different places depending on what the community needs and the families, what they present. And with that, I will simply say that we really support this bill. I think it provides a lot of important resources for the efforts that are needed. And I thank you for supporting it and for offering it.
Thank you, Ms. Enstrom. And Reverend Bjork, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Reverend Bruce Bjork, and I'm the Director of Programs for the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches. For the past 3 or 4 years at the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches, we have been deeply involved in working with local faith-based and community-based organizations that have a vision and a mission to reach out to the hardest to serve members of our community. This includes lots of different issue areas. Of course, early childhood is part of that. And over the last 3 years, we've learned a lot of things about what small faith-based and community-based organizations can do. And I'm here to tell you today that they are a grossly underutilized and underused asset and resource for the community. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 585, and in particular, Section 6 of House File 585, the section that talks about parent education grants, and the need for us as a community to find ways to direct services and direct resources into the community in ways that will enable us to reach the hardest to serve populations. Even well-resourced and highly successful programs are finding it difficult to reach into every community and serve every family in need of support. And in the state of Minnesota, the underserved and unserved are disproportionately communities of color and persons living in poverty. Our efforts may be well-intentioned, but a program is of little consequence, no matter how good it may be, if families are failing to take advantage of the opportunities that are made available to them. And I would argue that a family that chooses not to participate in a program does not see that program as a real and viable opportunity at all. Our responsibility as a community is to ensure that critical services are made available to everyone in a way and in a form that ensures accessibility to those who are most often excluded from the process and from the services they so desperately need. Section 6 of House File 585 makes provisions for parent education grants that specifically target those who are the hardest to serve. This is the part of the bill that excites me the most because I think it offers the opportunity not only to serve children, but to strengthen parenting, to strengthen families, and also to strengthen institutions. One of the problems that we have in our communities is that we often go in and try to fix problems with individuals, and then if we're really progressive and enlightened, we might try to fix problems with families. But what we need to be doing is strengthening the institutions that are present in communities so that families have a consistent and sustainable resource that they can access. There are lots of organizations out there, some very small, some very under-resourced, some with very little capacity, that with the kinds of support that this bill could conceivably provide could become very valuable assets to their community and strengthen parenting skills and competencies throughout the state of Minnesota. I would ask a couple of things as you consider this bill to think very carefully about what it means to be a licensed parent educator, and also what a well-educated and qualified staff person would look like. Because well-qualified and well-educated in some communities are not necessarily the same thing, or at least not necessarily the same thing as we may try to define them here. So let's think very carefully about how we can best serve the communities that are the hardest to serve, and be creative in making resources available to the leaders of those communities. I support this bill and would heartily endorse this effort. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Reverend Bjork. And you and I have worked together over the past few years on a number of related issues, and we met recently and talked a little bit about this, particularly the Section 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you could share with the committee what you shared with me in terms of some of the capacity issues. We assume, I think, here in St. Paul, the capacity issues are pretty uniform throughout our great state. And in our discussion, you were sharing, particularly in small town Minnesota, where some of the options may not exist to be able to provide these kind of services. And so the ability, the need for us to have some flexibility on, in terms of how we can flow state resources to deliver programs such as early childhood programs. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about what you're seeing throughout the state in this regard.
Well, I think one of the issues that we need to be really aware of is that delivering services through nonprofit organizations in particular, that government doesn't have the resources in place to deliver every service that a community needs. And that in many parts of our state, particularly in rural Minnesota, the only real nonprofit infrastructure that exists is in small town Minnesota are faith communities. And so finding ways to utilize the assets and the strengths that the faith community can bring to the delivery of services is very important. I know it raises some issues, some separation of church and state issues, and people get concerned about that. But there are appropriate ways for faith communities and government to work together. I'm kind of struck by the fact that Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the line about separation of church and state, also wrote in the Constitution about separation of powers. And I don't think any of us would suggest that the executive, judiciary, and legislative branches of government should never work together or be totally separate from one another. So I think there are appropriate ways for us to work together as a faith community and as a public organization and as public institution. There are a lot of capacity needs that these small organizations have. They can do tremendous things. They are gateway institutions. Small grassroots faith-based and community-based organizations are gateway institutions, and the value that they add is access to the hardest to serve clients. They have respect, they have the confidence of the communities that they serve, and that is something that is enormously valuable and an asset that we need to try to find ways to utilize.
Thank you, Reverend. Ms. Hedstrom, I wonder if you can answer a few questions for me. Section 4, the home visiting levy, has new language that says it may include hospital visits for families of newborns. Is that activity presently not happening with the ECFE? And can you tell us quickly what the nature of that activity would be?
Chairman Murray, members of the committee, as I looked over this, I realized I skipped that little box. Home visits have been a big, big piece of early childhood family education, and the home visits to newborns are actually one of probably our most cost-effective things. I know in collecting some data just a year ago on this, some of the places will actually reach 100% of the newborns. They go there on a regular basis. The hospital staff calls them, and most people are there at least 24 hours that they catch them. Those short hospital stays make some of these challenging. But that's a great way to reach parents. In Duluth, for example, they cover everyone. And at that point, 2 years ago, those hospital visits were costing them right around $7.45 per family. So that's quite a bargain to be able to do things with amazing newborns and people who couldn't come to the class. A lot of dads were taking time off from work and coming, and other people, if they couldn't leave their room and so on, then the staff would go to the room and work them individually. Otherwise, they did it in small groups.
And then, Ms. Sundstrom, in the first section, on lines 15 through 18, it indicates that the programs could use early learning guidelines for children's birth age to three that are developed by the Commissioner of Human Services or the childhood early childhood indicators developed by the Commissioner of Education. So it seems like there's two standards out there. Can you tell us a little bit? We could probably spend, I'm sure, an hour talking about the differences between them. I don't want to do that, but I just want to flag for members that apparently there are two sets of broad standards out there in this regard. And can you tell us a little bit about what they are and perhaps even offer some quick thoughts about eventual alignment of those two standards?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, those standards have been developed in conjunction with the people who work in a lot of these programs. So the 3 to 5 standards, which have been around longer, have been used by these programs. The ones from birth to 3 have just more recently been developed. And again, people who are actually in the provision of these services from the various entities, child care and early childhood education and so on, have been involved in those and have been using them as even as they've been developed. The other thing that both early childhood family education and school readiness have is they have set up some standards for quality criteria. How do you know if you are providing a program that is definitely quality and has some things that are very specific to those programs for that they're advised to use at least once a year to evaluate the program, and parents and other people help to do the evaluation. So all of those tools we would view as very helpful.
So, Ms. Sandstrom, these two standards are not exclusive of one another.
No, if you'll notice, they tend to be a continuum of age. So the first ones were 3 to 5, and then Human Services has done now the birth to 3, and it's meant to be that. They're also aligned with a lot of the standards in the K-12 system. So this is what builds into that. So they have all been aligned. There's some documents, actually, that will show that alignment that if you're interested, I could get for you.
Thank you. It's very helpful. We have a question. We have several questions from members. Representative Wardlaw and then Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support this bill. I'm a co-author on it. I like the part about the $120. I like the part about accountability, the parental education. I'm assuming there's a physical note forthcoming. There's two parts of it that give me a little bit of thought for pause. The words "may levy" scare me because I'm getting emails from people, "don't raise my taxes," and so the levy does scare me a little bit. And could you talk about the $1.60 up to $3.20 and a little bit? And also, the home visits, I understand they're cost-effective. I just worry that we become too intrusive and all of a sudden we're going to have, you will have a home visit and everybody will participate. That's the part that I worry about. Could you speak to those?
And members, just a reminder, and it's absolutely legitimate for any member to raise finance issues because the language is before us, but our hope is that finance issues, and once we get those fiscal notes, that those will be fully vetted in either Representative Slawitz or Representative Greiling's committee. But I don't want you to totally avoid those questions as well. Testifiers, any? Ms. Engstrom.
Yeah, I can respond to your question about the home visit. I share with you, I'm one of these people who doesn't think you should be intrusive and so on, and that's pretty much the philosophy of the program, too. So families are offered these. They do not make unannounced visits or anything like that. Even in the hospital, this is something that is set up and people are invited to. Over time, they all come, you know, so obviously it's unintrusive. The other flip side of that intrusiveness is that some families want the contact, but they don't want someone coming into their home because they're embarrassed or they have somebody there who, you know, is disruptive in this. And so some of those home visits actually are done at a mutually agreed place, like a coffee shop in some small towns and so on, where they're just different places where you can meet. But no, they aren't forced. They aren't forced upon anyone. Actually, I was real surprised when some of this was really getting going. I live in Robbinsdale School District, and they had put an ad in the suburban paper that anyone who wanted a home visit could contact them. And when I looked at it, I thought, oh, I can't imagine that many people doing this. They were overwhelmed by the response of people who wanted someone to connect with them. In early childhood family, we had one of our purposes, whenever possible, not only do we do the home visits, but we try then to connect them with an ongoing group, because a lot of these families are very isolated, and keeping them isolated isn't doing them a favor, and they just don't know themselves quite how to get connected. So I think facilitating that is also a good piece of a home visit.
I believe the governor does have an increase, not this number, but does have an increase in the per pupil here. Maybe the department can nod yes or no whether I'm correct about that. And we'll hear, hopefully we'll hear in a few minutes from the department. The numbers are different, however, Representative Erickson, but there is an intent of the governor to raise that revenue stream. We have a question for Representative Swales.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. I am looking at Section 6 parent education grants. I think in the news this past week we've had two very horrible examples of where perhaps parent education might have benefited the small children of our state. One is a four-year-old boy who was found wandering in a parking lot of a casino at midnight because his father was inside gambling and it was below zero. And the second was a child that died yesterday when it was discovered that the child had been somehow struck in the abdomen and already had had a skull fracture from a previous injury. When I look at the parent education grants, and I see that it's to promote, to focus on parent education to promote school readiness for children, parents of children birth to age 5 from underrepresented populations, including immigrants, English as a second language, tribal, low-income, and cultural communities. And then on the next page, it talks about some of the goals that I assume these programs will help remedy. Would you please talk to me a little bit about the size of the grants, the number of organizations that could benefit from being recipients of these grants, and if you have the number of children that possibly could be served through this provision?
Representative Lai.
Well, I don't really have answers to all of those questions. I think as the process of developing the grants and the criteria, looking at who could apply and what standards they would have to meet in order to be someone who could, I would imagine they would have to have a plan showing how they would meet those needs and perhaps even a curriculum developed of some kind. I don't really know for certain, but I think those are details that could be worked out, and you're right, but they should be. I think back to my own alternative program where we used grants to develop a teen parent program and had many of the components that are involved here with home visiting. And I even did some home visiting with young fathers myself, and we would often meet in a coffee shop or something like that. But the efforts that a program like that would make or applying for it, I think they would have to show the capacity to deal with those things, and it wouldn't just be anyone who applied to be able to meet it.
Representative Swales.
Okay, I appreciate that. It's just when we're making policy decisions like this, I also like to have a sense of the breadth. And so I would like for some research to go into, you know, the kinds of services that are already being provided through those kinds of grants. I know, for instance, United Hospital does a great outreach to, you know, parents of newborns. And I'm sure all of the major hospitals in the Twin Cities at least do that. I'm sure outstate hospitals do as well. But I think that parent education and helping new parents to understand the growth of their children and the responsibilities as caretakers, I think we need some documentation in order to understand what these grants are going to look like and what you know, how big that is going to be. Thank you.
Representative Bly, assuming that the bill moves forward, I think you've got some strong interest from members to provide that information in the upcoming finance committees. We have a question for Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Reverend Bjork, thanks for your work with faith-based and community-based child education. I think that's a very important piece to match up with the public sector in early childhood and family education. But you said that your programs are underused. So could you comment on how you market your programs? And then secondly, a couple of characteristics of, for example, a faith-based program?
Reverend Bjork.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what I meant to say was that the faith-based community as a community asset and resource is underutilized. That as an institution, the faith-based and community-based organizations in our communities could be utilized more effectively. I think that most of the faith-based organizations out there that have programs that they are delivering are not underutilized and underused. In fact, find themselves swamped and overwhelmed at times because they don't have sufficient resources to meet all the needs that that present themselves. As gateway institutions that have the trust and respect of the community, churches, mosques, synagogues can play a role that that no other institution can play. And there are also some secular nonprofits that that have that same kind of possibility. So this isn't just a faith-based initiative. It's a faith-based and community-based initiative. As far as what the faith community can do, as today and tomorrow, for example, we the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches is conducting a training in North Minneapolis where we're piloting a program with MELD and the Parents as Teachers program out of St. Louis, where we are going to establish parent education groups in six African American congregations, two in St. Paul and four in North Minneapolis. These are going to be led by leaders that the congregations have defined or identified for themselves. These are highly qualified, culturally competent people who understand the communities that they serve and who are going to be able to reach young parents in ways that many other programs, particularly those that have the stamp and mark of government too heavily on them, are going to be unable to do. Immigrants and communities of color and people who are poor, you know, they do feel intruded upon at times. If you've ever seen an MFIP job search plan that a young woman is required to follow in order to get her $476 a month in support, if you've ever seen a plan like that, you can I can tell you they don't need more intrusion in their life because they're unable to keep up with that, what they're already expected to do. But there are leaders and people in the community whose authority they respect and trust who can encourage and nurture them in ways that will get them to take advantage of the services that that can be provided. And it becomes a public-private partnership, an opportunity for government and the public or the private sector to work together to address a common task or a common set of outcomes. And you know, that's what we're trying to do. You know, I would really love to have conversations about lots of different issues on how government and the private sector can work together more closely.
So, Mr. Chair, to that point, Reverend Bjork, do you believe then that the word organizations in line 29 would include both community and faith-based organizations? Are you understanding this language that way?
I would like to understand it that way, and I think that that there has been a lot of effort over the past 6 years coming out of the administration in Washington, mm-hmm. and also Governor Plenty's administration to identify barriers that prevent that have prevented in the past faith-based organizations from being included in funding streams and funding opportunities. So I would hope that that we've gotten far enough down the line that faith-based organizations would be considered viable potential partners with the state of Minnesota.
So, thank you, Representative Mariani. And Reverend Bjork, since I misunderstood what you had initially said in your testimony, is it that churches and other organizations are not putting enough dollars or time into your programs? Is that what you meant by that opening statement instead of underused? Because I'm delighted to hear that you know, you're overflowing with demands for your programs.
I think what we have in the faith community is a lot of unrealized potential and a lot of capacity yet to be developed and a lot of resource yet to be tapped. So, you know, that's it is a portion of the service community that that hasn't reached its full potential yet.
And Mr. Chair, that's good to hear. I did have a question I wanted to ask of Karen Carlson, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson, you read my mind. I think we're going to try to keep moving along. We have another big bill before us. We do have some members who still have questions. If you can hold those for a second, I appreciate it.
If you can call her up at some time, I would appreciate that.
You bet, Representative Erickson. We do have Dr. Karen Ephraim, who's asked to testify on this bill. She can come forward, and if the testifiers can hang around, because there are questions here before us. Representative Y, while Dr. Ephraim comes up.
Just make one final comment. I mean, the purpose of this bill is really to try to reach those most hardest to reach, and we're trying to be creative in the ways that we reach out to them. And, you know, I hope that answers some of the questions that you have about it, and we will try to address those questions about grants and funding as we move forward. Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bly. Dr. Ephraim, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dr. Karen Ephraim. I'm a mother of three, a pediatrician and a policy analyst here on behalf of MedWatch. It's hard to know where to begin with these bills. Because of their scope and breadth. However,
we don't have a ton of time.
I know.
So
I know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The major concerns that we have about this particular bill are the cementing into statute of the both the 0-3 and the 3-5 guidelines, outcomes, standards, whichever you prefer to call them. And the kindergarten readiness assessments. The bill language says that they are to be for children who may be at risk of problems. Given the extensive writing in the research base about screening and assessment and how difficult it is to accurately do in young children, given the concerns that have been stated in multiple committees, even by proponents of screening and assessment, that these may not be valid, that there are all sorts of questions about them, particularly in the socio-emotional area or mental health area, we have grave concerns. I've testified previously in this committee and in others about the kindergarten readiness assessment, even in the academic areas of math and reading. Both the outcomes and the assessments are very vague and subjective, almost to the point of being meaningless. And when you get into the socio-emotional area, it gets to the point of preposterous. I'll just give you a couple of details about the about that particular area. Dr. Benedetto Vitiello, Chief of Child Psychiatry at the National Institutes of Mental Health, acknowledged in a journal article the diagnostic, this is a quote, the diagnostic uncertainty surrounding most manifestations of psychopathology in early childhood, end quote. The U.S. Surgeon General, the World Health Organization, and psychiatric textbook authors have made similar statements. Even the National Center for Infant and Early Childhood Health Policy, the organization that is promoting nationwide and implementing the idea of screening, especially from 0 to 3, said in a 2005 report, quote, diagnostic classifications for infancy are still being developed and validated. This is for mental health. Quote, broad parameters for determining socio-emotional outcomes are not clearly defined, end quote. There's also disagreement about diagnosis. There's also significant lack of effectiveness. Dr. Vitiello said, quote, little research has been conducted to study the effectiveness of psychosocial interventions in young children, and the long-term risk-benefit ratio of psychosocial and pharmacologic treatments is basically unknown. There's also, quote, lack of longitudinal outcome studies, end quote. And, quote, there is neither a systemic database, clear criteria for treatment or dosage recommendations that have been identified, or standards for pediatric use, and that is concerning medication. I've already talked about the over-identification of poor and minorities. The kindergarten readiness assessment is also over-identifying boys, which is another major problem. And we are dealing with, in this country, with a rampant overuse of psychiatric medication in young children. Vanderbilt released a study in 2006 showing that 2.5 million children in the United States are on antipsychotic medications, the most potent and powerful, the youngest being 18 months old. Another study examining the side effects of these particular medications found 45 deaths in children, the youngest being 4 years old, and they admitted that it was 1 to 10% of the total.
Excuse me, Ms. Heffram, I am going to need to move us along. You're raising legitimate issues, but we're also starting to range pretty far from, in my opinion, from the language before us. I do want to hear from the department. We do have members who have questions. I still have another bill I want to get through, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just summarize the other concerns about the bill in that it is a resurrection of the failed, controversial, and bipartisanly rejected profile of learning for young children, and it puts in No Child Left Behind style adequate yearly progress, and given the amount of bipartisan distaste for No Child Left Behind with its cost, its mandates, the adequate yearly progress that is failing to close the achievement gap, we really question why you would want to do that.
Thank you, Ms. Heffram. Is there someone from the department that can come down? I believe Representative Erickson has a question. And would like to have a quick sense from the Department of House File 585. Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Karen Carlson from the Department of Education.
Welcome, Ms. Carlson. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Mayani. Ms. Carlson, in Section 2, Subdivision 13, under Program Accountability Plan, would you explain to us what the department would be doing to develop an accountability plan, actually to me it sounds like an accessibility plan, that focuses on race, ethnicity, and income demographics. That sounds to me like we're touching data that is not to be public. So to what extent does the department involve itself in those areas?
Ms. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, to your
My answer is I have absolutely no idea. This is not
fair enough.
This is not my bill, and I don't really know what that means. And so I have to have more discussion about that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. If I can quickly follow up, the governor has, in his suggestions, language that is sort of similar to this. I think he puts it under program requirements as opposed to an accountability plan. Can you just speak very briefly about what the intent is of the governor? Because I think there may be overlaps of intent here.
Mr. Chair, I think you're probably right on the money when you say the overlap is an intent. I think the difference is in the governor's bill, the it is actually, if you look at pages 3 and 4 in here on the parent education grants, those duties are actually the same as in the ECFE statute. And what the governor does is add a requirement to ask the districts, have the districts submit evidence that they are providing services that are representative of their areas. And so it's a little different. It's a different approach to get to the same intent, I think. But that reasoning behind that is so, I mean, each district is different from one another. The early childhood family programs are different from one another. And so the governor is asking for the local district to give evidence that they're meeting the needs of their communities.
Thank you, Ms. Carlson, and thank you, Representative Erickson. I had failed to raise that question as one of my questions as well. And no, that's right. It's good to have the committee members to do this. And Representative Slawick and Representative Greiley, you've heard the testimony, and I think that assuming that this moves forward, that there'll be some good vetting in terms of where that overlap is. I think that there's common intention. It seems to me, as I read the governor's language and as I read the language of Representative Bly's bill, in terms of helping these programs to really be able to customize their approach and their efforts with our growing diversity in early childhood communities. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill? Okay, I'm going to try to move for a vote here, but I do have several members have some questions. I'm going to make a stab at a couple here, and if someone has anything really burning, please just wave wildly, and I'll try to acknowledge you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and this is a quick one. I share, Mr. Chair, your enthusiasm for Section 6. It's very similar goals and objectives to some legislation I've introduced in the past around parent involvement in the K-12. But the one question I have is either for Representative Bly or maybe Reverend Bjork, have you given thought to involving parents directly, in the governance, for example, discussing with the parents what they would like to see in the programs, having them as partners defining kind of the scope and the services and what their needs are rather than just sort of a direct service model, because some of the parent involvement programs I've studied around the country, including some faith-based partnerships, have done that with really, really good success.
Very quickly, Representative
Bly. I think that's an excellent suggestion, and in the program that I have experience with, my own alternative program, that is something that we did, and it would, some time ago in our early childhood, Representative Wardlow mentioned the importance of relationship and establishing relationship and these kinds of things, and that is really part of it. If you include people in the decision making, they feel a part of it, and you're also building a good relationship with them. So that's very important. Yeah.
Thank you,
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to reiterate anything that anybody has said, but I'm going to try to put a few thoughts together after I have talked with Ms. Larson. I will be able to see the bill again, so I'm just going to suggest these things as friendly suggestions instead of any sort of amendment process, because I think it would get too complex and complicated. I just want to say I do appreciate the intent of the bill, and I think that there are some of the concerns that have been raised that could be alleviated if we made a few minor changes. And the first would be on the first page, line 14, where it says, their children who may be at risk. I do believe may is a very passive word, and I would like to know who, after first giving birth, is not at risk of something. For those of us who have given birth, you are. The next line, line 15, it's the learning guidelines. Those can change, can be moved, can be adapted to any situation, any district, not any district, but I think they're just a little vague. What Ms. Larson has suggested is that we change them from guidelines to give the Department of Education rulemaking authority, and then they would be fixed, and we would get public input put on them. And that would speak to what Representative Hornstein was just talking about. Then the public, the parents, would have some input, and then we would have more public buy-in of these are the goals that we are trying to achieve. I just think that that would help the bill a lot.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich. And it could well be, if we move in the direction of rulemaking, the bill might be back here. Representative Gutwalt, for a final question, and I'd like to move to a vote unless there's something that's super major that we've missed here. Representative Gutwalt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll pass over a number of things that have already been covered. I still have concerns about the extent to which the state sometimes gets involved in the family, but I do appreciate the grant aspect of this. I think that was discussed somewhat through Representative Erickson's questions. We talked about the concern about defining at-risk and the maybe. I appreciate the comments about parental feedback and involvement in determining what the goals of this are. On our accountability plan, we talked a little about that, but I'd like to know a little bit more about what you mean by accountability plan. There were some questions about this, and whether that could include some accountability about results.
Representative Lott.
The intent of the bill is to encourage various groups out there, organizations, and ECFE, to reach out to the most needed. And so that's really what we're looking at as far as accountability. Are they doing that? Are they making good effort to reach out? As far as results, that's sort of beyond the scope of this particular bill, although I'm sure it's important that we know that our efforts are being fruitful.
Just one other question here, too, under Subdivision 6, Section 4 on page 3. Again, the hospital visits, concern about duplication. I know I've had 5 children. I've been present at all of their births. I've been in the hospital room with my wife during those early days, and I'm not sure that I would have wanted somebody marching in and saying, I'm here to assess or to help you parent, because I can do that pretty well myself, I felt. So I'm a little concerned about the invasiveness, but also the concern about, is this for everybody? Is this going to be just for some? Is it going to overlap with what many hospitals are already doing in the way of hospital visits with newborns? Any comment on that?
Representative Bly.
Representative Mariani and Representative Dotwell. The intent is to reach out to those who most need that help, those families and children who are most at risk. And so the effort would really be, and I liked the way that my testifier described it, there really is an effort to develop a relationship with the person that you're trying to help or trying to bring along. And I think that's really key. It's important. As I reflect on my involvement in the program that we had at my alternative program, when these teen moms would deliver, in many cases we already had a relationship with them, but they really wanted someone there. They needed someone to be with them and be an advocate for them and give them information.
Mr. Chair, my concern again is around how we define at risk. How do we know who that is and who are we going into and some of the duplication? And that's about it, other than the financial issues, which I understand we'll vet in the Finance Committee.
Members, my hope is that we can get this bill to Representative Flowers' committee to really struggle with some of the issues that we've raised here that from both sides of the aisle on this. I think I do like the bill. I like the purpose and the intent of the bill, and I'm sensing that from all sorts of members, but I'm also sensing a lot of questions, and we only have so much time in our committee to be able to vet this kind of work, so I'd like to move it on to another committee to do some further vetting. And so with that, I am going to actually change my motion numbers. And my motion will be to move House File 585 as amended without further recommendation, but to move it on to the Finance Committee and to indicate that our intent is that the Finance Committee move the bill to Representative Slawik's committee. So with that, any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion prevails. Representative Bly, thank you, and you've got a lot of work ahead of you.
Yes, thank
you. But thank you for bringing us this good concept. Members, we're going to move to House File 302, Representative Peterson. Representative Peterson, please identify yourself for the record, and you'll want to make a motion, I hope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Sandra Peterson, and I have Zoe Nikolai, who also is representing the early childhood community. Because of the limited time, I'm going to be pretty brief in this beginning part and at least try to get our three speakers or testifiers the opportunity, because I know they came from a
wonderful
little bit of a distance.
Representative Peterson, I wonder if you would move your bill first.
Okay. I would move Bill 302 to...
You recommend it to pass and refer to Finance?
Sorry. Recommend it to pass and move to Finance Committee.
And then you have an amendment, maybe two amendments?
I have an amendment, which is, yes, a 302A1, and it's basically technical changes, nothing of substance that I think would need to be explained right
Wonderful.
Now.
Wonderful. Would you move that amendment, then?
I would move the amendment.
Members, Representative Peterson moves amendment. Actually, Representative Peterson moves House File 302 be recommended to pass and refer to Finance. And she moves Amendment H.O. 302A1 to put this bill in the shape that the author would wish it. Any discussion on the amendment? Representative Demmer.
Mr. Chair, you said move the Finance.
Representative Demmer, under our new structure, which I'm still adjusting to, it'll go to the big, big, big Finance Committee, which then will, is that correct? Representative Demmer, that's correct. And then about a year later, it'll get down to the the committee.
Thank you.
You and I will persevere together, Representative Demmer. All in favor of the Peterson motion to amend her bill with the A1 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment prevails. Representative Peterson.
Thank you. I'm very enthusiastic about this bill because for a long time I felt that we've had a very fragmented early childhood system, and this bill actually has three parts. The first part deals with the hub centers. The second part deals with a preschool through grade 3 kind of transition program, and then the third part deals with preschool assessments. I like this approach because it's a systemic approach. It tries to pull together all this system, all the pieces of this system, into something that makes sense and is a resource for parents as well as students and teachers and professionals who are working in the early childhood field. I picked up the letter, actually, from Claudia Otis, who from Proctor Hermantown, and I thought one of the sentences in her letter at the end was very good. She said, "We want to organize what is often a chaos of assessments, community, and scope and sequence of entering formal school, and this bill would provide more threads with a tighter weave, and kids would not be falling through the cracks as readily." I think that this bill has a real opportunity to provide the kind of coordination that we need. The first section, the section on the hubs, I call the three C's, the communication, the collaboration, and the coordination, because it tries to pull together all of those early childhood programs, all of the programs that might be in a particular district, and put them in a hub, which would be located in a school system. It could be in a school, it could be in a site off the school or a tribal school, and it would provide the kind of information for parents that they would need to be able to adequately work with their children and provide the programs that they think are essential for their children to be successful in school. The second part of the program, the kindergarten, the pre-kindergarten through grade three programs, are more about transitions. How do we provide programs or programs at a site, perhaps, or several sites, that would provide a very sound transition from the preschool programs all the way through the third grade program. When we were at the New Horizons, I know we had the opportunity to view one program where there indeed was that kind of transition. It was a person who was hired, given a grant money by the Wilder Foundation, to work as a liaison between the St. Paul School System and the New Horizons. They would go back and forth, not only coordinating their curriculum, but their professional development, do exchange visits, get to know the children, do the assessments, a lot of the kind of coordination that made for a successful entry into the kindergarten program in the St. Paul schools. That's just one example of how this could work. Again, these are grants, and the communities themselves would have the opportunity to be creative and to set up the kinds of programs they think would make for good coordination within their systems. And last but not least, the other part is doing the developmental assessment to entering kindergartners. I think we need that kind of data to know how we're doing with our children, where we have gaps, where we have holes, and are our children ready for the school day as they enter kindergarten. So with that, I'm going to move to introduce Zoe so we can get our testifiers here.
Ms. Nicolai, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and give us a very concise and brief testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Zoe Nicolai, Director of Public Policy, Ready for K. As the Representative Peterson has already described, this is a bill that we think is a real important piece of building a system that works for families to increase school readiness. We developed this bill by bringing together a group of K-12 folks as well as early care and education providers and looked at very successful models, some of what you're going to hear in our next two testifiers. Basically, you know, we want to see ready kids, ready parents, ready communities, ready schools. And this bill puts together, using the assessment that you've seen before that was only done in a sample of school districts, to give a benchmark statewide with how we're doing. In year four, the Department of Education did this in 36 Minnesota Initiative communities. And what they found was this was a wonderful tool, this assessment, for really increasing the capacity of a community to come around this issue of how well are our kids doing when they enter kindergarten. The bill puts in place grants that will help communities do a better job of working with the parents, with the care and the care and education providers. And by that we mean wherever kids are, whatever settings, whether it's a family, friend, and neighbor, caregiver, Head Start, child care, family child care. We want to make sure that the schools are communicating, your three C's I loved, what it is a child needs to know and be able to do when they get to kindergarten. And I think this bill does that. So in the efforts of being brief, do you want to introduce? Okay, then I'd like to ask Doris Carls, Director of Community Education in Stillwater Public Schools, and Kate Benestru, St. Paul Public Schools. And is Carol Hutner also here? Yes, okay, great. From the Bloomington-Richfield Community Education to describe some local efforts that reflect, we think, this bill.
Wonderful. Members, what I'm going to do, because we have 15 minutes left, is suggest that we hear this testimony, we get in questions and answers, and then lay this over for further deliberation to our next meeting. It seems to be the fair thing to do, make sure we're doing our work well, and that we can honor the testimony of folks who have traveled to be here. So let's proceed in that manner. Welcome to the committee. Please come up and identify yourselves for the record and give us your testimony.
Good Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am pleased to be here this morning to testify in support of House Bill 302. As was mentioned, I'm Director of Community Education and Community Relations for Stillwater Area Public Schools. I'd also like to note, because I have a few comments related to the transition piece of this bill, that I was a teacher for 8 years, am licensed as a K-12 principal, and have served as an assistant principal for 6 years during my career.
Wonderful. Welcome, and please do identify your name for the record, because we're keeping...
Doris Carls.
Thank you. Please proceed, Ms. Carls.
There are many successful partnerships already in place between school district programs and community organizations serving children and families throughout the state. Partnerships are developmental in nature, just like children develop, partnerships develop. What is needed to build on already existing partnerships and to forge new partnerships are a convener and facilitator, partners with a commitment to a shared vision and goals, and effective development and implementation processes supported by targeted resources and funding. House Bill 302 provides the needed support for effective partnerships to form and to meet the goals for which they are intended. The best possible scenario to achieve school readiness for all children rests in the ability of organizations in the community to work together. Partnerships clearly expand the capacity for high-quality early education and child care. I am honored to be involved in an integrated model of partnership, and it's called the St. Croix Valley Area Community Family Center Partnership. I provided a folder of information to you. It's an example of what this bill could help to achieve around the state of Minnesota. I happen to serve as chair of the integrated planning team. As is mentioned in this bill, schools are often the hub or conveners of such partnerships in the community. And this partnership has been involved for 3 years, working together and with significant results. Just mention briefly what we are doing. Our aim as a partnership is to provide accessible integrated programs and services through public and private partnerships. The partners that are involved are the Greater YMCA of Greater St. Paul, Stillwater Area Public Schools, our early childhood and adult basic education programs, St. Croix Area United Way. I think we have a wonderful business partner in Anderson Corporation, Human Services Incorporated, Courage St. Croix, Lakeview Hospitals, and municipal partners are very important also. In our case, it's the City of Bayport, Lake Elmo, Oak Park Heights, and Stillwater. Head Start is also involved in the program planning and implementation. These integrated programs serve the whole child and whole family, and I would advocate for that as a very important feature. They foster ease of access to services and education, child care, health and wellness, and recreation. Barriers to participation are addressed. And let me give you an example. Our district is 35 miles long, 250 square miles, has 17 municipalities, just to give you an idea of some of us are working with. Parents and community members are involved in the planning and implementation process and are seen as partners in the educational process, both pre-K and throughout the school years. Results are measured. Our partnership has also been working with researchers at the University of Minnesota. We think two elements are very important if a grant were allowed, and that is to look at, there's not a lot of empirical evidence on the books yet, regarding the impact of integrated models on outcomes for children and families. And then the other piece I'd like to contend also we have to work with is the staff development necessary for professionals across organizations to work effectively in an integrated model. Bill 302 provides resources to support necessary planning processes, and here are some of those processes. The interagency program development, research, public engagement and feedback, as was mentioned earlier, and design of both programs and spaces. We have learned to consider resources in their broadest sense to include expertise, time, and financial. Partnering organizations, boards, and councils need to be informed and make commitments of time and resource to these partnerships over time to impact long-term goals such as school readiness. We as a partnership that are in it for the long haul. It's almost a systems change model. Staff development and effective outreach strategy is essential, and then this bill would help us to move to fully implement assessment and research components around these issues too. I would make just a few comments regarding the pre-K through grade 3 area, and it's because of my professional expertise I'd like to make these comments. If we are really going to make impressive gains in literacy skills, let's just take that as an example. As a school district with a large range as ours, one of the things we have found is a major commitment needs to be made to have early childhood and K through 3 teachers trained together. Together is a key word. They're meeting together as professionals and gaining training, both in the district's literacy program and also in emergent literacy programs such as Literacy First and First Steps Reading. Joint staff development has been mentioned earlier. That's very important for early care and early education professionals to come together. Standards need to be aligned between pre-K and grade 3 curriculum. And I believe strongly in a fully inclusive model where children with special needs are involved with programming, just as in the K-12 programming in early childhood. Children's progress is assessed and gaps are addressed. Resources come together, or the various organizations come together. Parent involvement is really critical, and I think an important part of early childhood family education programs, not to be overlooked, as the parent education component. I have found in my professional work that if the parent is involved in the preschool area, they often are very much involved throughout the children's career. And we also need to have parent education at key transition points. For example, if you've had children move from elementary to junior high school, it's kind of a scary time for parents. And also as parents are moving with their children from junior high school to senior high school, and then again from high school to college. Those are important transition points, and licensed parent educators can really be valuable to those efforts. And then this bill really addresses transition from pre-K to K, which I think is very important. As a group of community organizations, internal and external to the school district, we just did a sneak a peek, which is parent-child activities provided by early childhood and parent ed staff that was in each building throughout the district. We have 10 elementaries. Not until professionals from various organizations work together do they gain an appreciation for their respective expertise and skills and see the relationship and common vision and goals they hold for children and families. And that's clearly what we have found in our work. The folder that I gave you contains information about our partnership, and I believe we have quality education and child care systems in the state to impact school readiness, as an example. This bill will promote new partnerships and strengthen already existing partnerships to meet the needs of children and families. I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carls. You gave us a lot to ponder there, but thank you. We have 5 minutes left. I'm going to leave it to our two testifiers about how to use that time. We are going to hold this bill over, and I would certainly welcome you back when we take up the bill to offer testimony at that time, but I leave that to you. Think quickly, and then identify yourself for the record. And we do have 5 minutes that we can use for testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I did time this to 3 minutes, so I'll go. My name is Kate Bonestrow, and I work with St. Paul Public Schools, and for the past 2 years I've had the opportunity to work on a pilot program known as Project Early Kindergarten. It's funded through the McKnight Foundation, and the overarching goal of this is to stop the achievement gap. The component of the grant that I work with is on implementing many of the ideas that are being proposed through this bill, Section 2 in particular. Specifically, we're working on aligning the early care and education community with St. Paul Public Schools pre-K and K standards. We're looking at systems change for transitioning kids from the child care community into the schools. And we're looking at providing meaningful parent involvement opportunities, which allows parents to extend the learning at home. We're working with 6 licensed child care centers and 12 family homes, licensed family homes. It's about 190 children between the ages of 2.5 and pre-kindergarten years. All of the participants have volunteered to be in this project. They attend monthly trainings, and they also work with the coach that comes into their home or their centers. And these are licensed early childhood educators, either working with St. Paul Schools or with Resources for Child Caring. The parents in the program then also receive monthly tips about how to extend the learning at home in math and literacy and social skills. They receive monthly information on how to get their kids ready for school, including access to health care and early childhood screening services such as that. They're invited to any neighborhood events at schools that would be helpful for them, and also they receive community information on community resources that are available to families with young children living in St. Paul. And, of course, the children are benefiting from having experiences that are similar to the St. Paul Public Schools 4-year-old program. We have just had tremendous support and energy around this from the providers and for the families, and we're seeing significant results in impacting the school readiness of the children in the centers and homes that we work with. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Benestrel. And I take it you're Carol Huttner.
Yes.
We have 2 or 3 minutes, and I'll leave it to you if you want to come back or if you want to offer your testimony at this point.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, what I'd like to do is take my 3 minute and give it one, and then if you'd like me to come back, I'd be happy to do
Wonderful.
That.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the
My name is Carol Huttner, and I'm the Director of Youth and Family Services for Bloomington and Richfield Public Schools. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify on behalf of this House File 302. I really had 3 points relating to the bill. One is, in order for us to get our kids ready for kindergarten, as well as the families ready to support them, we need to have comprehensive services, a broad array of services, and co-locating those services makes it much easier for families to access and much more efficient for our program people to operate. And then the other piece is that I think this bill addresses is we spend a lot of time talking about getting our kids ready for K, and I think this bill goes further in getting our K ready for the families that are coming. Those were my main points, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Wow, that's
terrific.
And powerful points as well. I have a couple minutes, and I want to just say a few things. And actually, I'm going to ask Representative Erickson. She doesn't know this, but I'm going to ask her to weigh in here, too. We're going to I'm going to hold this bill over. We'll take it up at our next hearing. What I want to do is encourage members of the committee to engage with Representative Peterson between now and then in terms of any issues or suggestions that you want to offer. That will hopefully make our time much more efficient when we meet next time. And I'm wondering, Representative Erickson, if along those lines, if there's anything you want to flag, for members or others as our lead Republican member of the committee here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will definitely meet with my caucus, and we will come up with some questions, and we'll make sure that we ask them of
from the Minneapolis.
Representative Peterson. I'm sure we do have concerns. I don't think I'll go into the detail of them. But I think we're going to be arguing that we're growing government maybe a little bit too much here.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Erickson. And again, to the testifiers, please feel welcome to come back. Maybe flesh out your testimony a little bit more if you would so desire, and also perhaps be available to answer questions and have an exchange with the committee when we take the bill up again. We plan to take the bill up again next week. So I don't want to just sit on this for a long time. Also, there are other folks here who have come to testify on the bill today. My apologies for running out of time. I do welcome you back for our next committee hearing on Tuesday. We will take this bill up again. So, Representative Peterson, what I will do is the chair is hold this bill over until our next meeting. Members, we are adjourned until next Tuesday. Thank you.